Lip smacking good. Hello, everybody out there in the Black Guy Who Tips Nation. This is another premium episode of Lip Smacking Good, where the motto of this show is, if it ain't lip smacking, it ain't good. I would like to introduce to you guys a guest. His name is Mark Paxton. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
That is correct.
All right. He does a podcast that I found on Stitcher Radio called Food Marketing Podcast. And I really enjoy it. And I want to introduce him to all the fans of the Black Guy Who Tips Nation. Could you tell our fans a little bit about you, sir?
Sure, you bet. I've kind of been in a lot of different industries and jobs that I've done. I've worked in a mailroom. I did some door-to-door stuff, actually overseas. And then after graduate school, I worked at a high-tech company for a while, and that went out of business. And then I couldn't find a job, so I started my own business, and I've been running that and then also doing the food marketing podcast on top of that. So I've been pretty busy and hopping all over the place.
That's a good thing. You sound like a very busy man. And I can tell you this much. When my husband told me that you want to do the show, I was excited. I was like, okay, cool. I was like, I go check him out. And, there's about, 14, 15 different Mark Paxtons out there. I found out you were an architect. You also was in South Africa.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I was like, wow. I was like, well, this is good and bad. It's bad because I'm trying to find information and I can't right now. Cause it's like, I don't want to be talking about the wrong Mark.
Yeah.
But it's also a good thing because that means I have more questions that I can ask you.
Well, that's great. I'm ready for any question you can throw at me.
Yes, sir. About your podcast, what made you start, doing your podcast? Because I listened to it and it's very, very educational. And I don't know if you purposely do it like that, but for me, I listened to your most recent one you did about dyes and the different dyes and different types of foods.
Yeah.
And I sat at my desk like, oh my God, you have got to be kidding me. I was like, I did not know this. It's very, I guess for the average or the normal consumer, this kind of separated. We just go purchase food. We don't really know much about the food industry itself. Like, how much do you know about the food industry? Are you a part of the food industry?
Well, actually, I grew up in the food industry. My father, when I was about 4, he got a job working at Frito-Lay.
Okay.
And then he worked at Frito-Lay for a while, and then Frito-Lay is a part of PepsiCo. So then he worked at PepsiCo, then he worked at Pepsi-Cola, then he worked at Pizza Hut.
And KFC is connected in that too, aren't they?
Yeah, it was. Yeah. They actually spun off their restaurant divisions into their own company called Yum Brands. But when my father was there, they were all part of PepsiCo.
Okay.
So he worked at a bunch of those companies. So up until the time I went to college, he worked in the food industry. So he'd come home talking about stuff and, you know, we'd go to restaurants a lot, and he had all these crazy stories about having to, you know, like going to restaurants and eat the food and then be like going to the back and say, hey, guess who I am and here's how you did. So all that kind of crazy stuff. So I have a lot of stories from my father about the food industry. So I was always interested in this as a kid. And sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no problem. So I will ask you, what kind of stories would your father tell you?
Well, a lot of them would be, you know, I had to go to this Pizza Hut and, you know, he'd have to pretend to just be there eating. And he'd eat the food, and then they'd have, you know, they'd give him the check, and they'd say, thank you for coming in, or whatever. And then he'd stand up and say, actually, I'm the senior vice president of human resources at Pizza Hut, so I'd like to go in the back and talk to your employees. And oftentimes, they'd call up the manager and say, there's a guy here who wants to come in the back of the store.
I know that didn't go over well. Was he ever threatened? Or did they ever say, get off our property?
Well, it depends. It depends. Like, sometimes they're like, oh, yeah, come in the back. That's fine. They went to one restaurant that they heard a lot of bad things about, and all the employees, like, they didn't get their food until it was cold and it had been sitting for 45 minutes, all sorts of things like that.
Oh.
So when there were issues like that, then they were afraid to let him in the back.
Wow. What is the most, I guess, disturbing story that your father ever told you?
Well, it's like I was saying about that one restaurant that was just so bad. Like, the service was awful and the food was all cold. And he's like, I didn't even want to eat the food because it had been sitting so long I could tell that I didn't want to get food poisoning from it, but I had to at least, you know, pretend to try and eat it. Yeah, so that was probably the worst story when he's like, I couldn't even eat the food. It was so old and gross. And I was like, that's not a good restaurant experience for anyone.
At all. Wow. So your father basically did a lot of traveling across, I guess, around the country and the world, I'm assuming.
Occasionally he did go around the world, yeah. But yeah, he did a lot of stuff. Like I said, he was in human resources for these companies. So he talked to the employees a lot and occasionally had to do employee counseling and stuff. So yeah, he had all sorts of fun experiences like that.
Did doing the podcast and being in the food industry and hearing the stories from your dad, did they make you change the way you look and perceive food?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I think maybe I always had a different way of looking at food because I grew up with my father being in the food industry. So I always felt like I had a sort of backdoor look at restaurants especially and how they operate. So that was always interesting. And then helped, of course, parlay into the operations and marketing that I do currently for a salsa company. So it all kind of, yeah, I've always had a sort of different approach, I think, that most people don't have to food and food preparation and sanitization and stuff like that.
And just being all around healthy when it comes to food, does it make you want to, or do you actually grow your own food, grow your own livestock and cattle and all that stuff? Because I'm assuming when you hear these stories, you probably hear stories that the average person doesn't hear. And it's one of those things where you're going, well, wow, I need to dig in my backyard so I know everything that's in my food.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of funny. I live next door, to a guy that, sells like industrial fertilizers things for a living, and he had a garden back there that he used as kind of a test bed to see what all the different chemicals and stuff would do to the food. And yeah, he grew some amazing stuff. Like his strawberry plants were 5 feet tall.
Wow.
And it was incredible. It was incredible. You know, and they tasted pretty good, but I was always like, I don't know how many chemicals I'm eating in this food because you use this as a test bed for all this stuff, and your strawberry plant should not be that big, man.
No, that's abnormal. And what I realized, especially listening to your podcast and learning, like my grandmother and not mine, but my husband's mother and father, they grow their own squash, their own cucumbers, and his father does his own peppers, and I go out there and it's really bitty. It's like old school.
Yeah.
And they are the sweetest things ever. Like they're sweet and they're juicy and it's natural. They don't last long because, like you said, because they're not designed to be shipped across the country or sit on the store shelf for five days and all that stuff. And so it's one of those things where, do you think that the pesticides that they put on the food adversely affect the general population?
You know, it's entirely possible. Just, you know, you look at how much we use pesticides now, and that's just gone up and up over the past 100 years. And of course, over the past 100 years, rates of disease in this country, especially diseases that we've never seen before, not in greatest number, have all gone up. And it's got to be what some of the stuff that we're consuming, because otherwise, I don't know where else it would come from.
That's true. Have you ever did a cover the story about, I want to say like Monsanto, if I'm pronouncing that right, about the seed place? Have you ever did anything about their seeds and how they, I guess, manipulate their seeds?
No, I haven't heard about that specifically, but I do know that a lot of places do research into manipulating on the cellular level, the things that they grow so that they can get a longer shelf life or grow bigger or, you know, have more juice in them. There are all sorts of different things that people are always trying to do with science to get a higher yield or bang for their buck, I guess, with the food that they grow. But, you know, they don't do tests on, you know, how much this is going to increase the cancer rate in the country, which they probably should do.
That's true, too. And in addition to, like, plants, do you do, like, animals, too? And the reason why I'm asking, because, you know, like, with the chickens and the cows and the pigs and things we eat, they pump them full of hormones and a lot of this stuff. And on the backside, you have, like, girls, like, they're, you know, 10, and they have a body of a 35-year-old. Yeah. And you're like, oh, my gosh, what's happening here?
Yeah. Yeah, they do all sorts of stuff. Like, I haven't talked about it on my show yet, But I do know that there are a lot of things they do with growth hormones and things to make the chickens bigger. I actually read an article about how they breed chickens, or turkeys even especially, to have a larger, like have more breast meat on them.
Yes.
But it actually impedes them actually being able to reproduce.
Oh.
So that 90% of the turkeys in this country that people eat are actually artificially inseminated because they can't actually naturally breed because their breast meat is so large that it actually covers up their genitals so that they can't reproduce naturally.
Wow. Oh, and who is the person or people that actually get the semen from the males to put into the females? Like, I wonder who has that job.
That's not a job I would like to have, I'll
no.
tell you that. No, that's not a good job at all. But there are people that have that job, and I guess good for them because we all get to eat turkey at Thanksgiving. But
that's true.
It's an insane thing, and like I said, that's not a job that I would ever want to have.
No, because I was thinking, I was like, and you know what? It's probably a whole industry of people that just do this and be like, you know what? Don't worry about it. Just buy a bunch of females. We got a bunch of males, and we'll ship you over some semen. I'm assuming that's how it works. I might be completely wrong.
I don't know. I think if you have a really, really high-end operation, you'd have both and have a full-time semen extractor on staff, but
I'm assuming so to make it easier, simplify it. Wow, the poor turkeys. Yeah.
I know it's like, wouldn't it just be easier for everyone if you just let them breed on their own
naturally? Yes. And is it true they were saying that a lot of times for turkeys and probably with chickens too, but we're talking about their breasts, they grow so big that it causes them to tip over too because it's just so much weight? Like, that's what I heard.
Yeah.
like they said, it's so
sure.
big they just tip over, and it was like, there's nothing we can really do about this. I was like, okay, you know, I want a regular pound breast. I don't want an 85 pound chicken breast.
Yeah,
that's not right.
Yeah, it just doesn't fit right in a package either, so it just doesn't, I don't know. They're always trying new things to mess with our food, and like I said, it's just not particularly healthy for us, and that's why, like, when I started with two other entrepreneurs, this green tomatillo salsa mm-hmm. business that I'm working at right now, where we sell, they're all natural, no artificial colors, no artificial sweeteners or anything in that, it's all natural, and it just tastes better, really.
You know what? It does. And I'm not sure if this is your product, but I'm down here in Charlotte, North Carolina, and I don't know if me and my husband or somebody bought some, and it is absolutely delicious.
Yeah, I wish we were in South Carolina. We're just in California right now, but we're looking to expand, and because it's a great product, and people love it when they have it.
It's something about, like, fresh. Do you see, like, more people, once they learn about their food and learn what's in their food, going back to, like, natural stuff, like my husband's parents and things like that, more of growing things out of their garden and things like that?
Yeah, I think there's definitely lately there's been more of a trend of, we got to watch what we eat because we know where it comes from now. I think a lot of people don't care, really. They're just
That's
like,
true.
You know, whatever.
As long as it's good.
Yeah, exactly. There's some people who don't really care, and that's why, you know, Doritos still sell so well, although there's not much corn left in there. It's mostly chemicals and powdered dyes and stuff, so.
And you know what? For me, I am a huge Doritos fan, and mm-hmm. I have noticed, I guess because I like to eat, so I've noticed over the years that they've literally have changed, because years ago, when you just get a Cool Ranch Dorito, you literally got a corn chip with dust.
Yeah.
And now when I bite into it, I feel like I get dust and a little corn chip.
Yeah.
and I'm like, this is not Doritos. Like, and it's one of those things, I guess, as a consumer, it's one of those things where you kind of can see things changing. And what do you think about the food industries, which I think this is hilarious? People are wanting things to look more natural. So what do you think about places like McDonald's and like Tyson's Chicken and all these places when they say, okay, you want things to look natural? Instead of it looking like a circle, we're going to have our machines to spend billions of dollars to cut it unnatural So it looks unnatural, but we're still giving you the same product.
I know. It's just ridiculous. Like, do you really have to go to all that trouble? And I guess they do because people are asking for it. And they say, well, we have this big machine that prints out same shaped stuff. What are we going to do with that? Well, we'll just put a thing on it to make it print out the things to look like a natural shape. It's just, I don't know. I don't know. It's just like this big industrial machine. It's like they can't get rid of it. I guess they probably could if they really wanted to take things. But the consumers, for the most part, were not that smart.
You know what?
They'll take what they give us and say, okay, this is good.
That and also when you have people that are invested, investors who demand profits, because I forgot who the company was, but it was a company and they actually changed their product. What they the soup, one of the soup companies cut down the amount of salt in their product. They was like, hey, we want to go healthy. We know we have healthy people. They literally changed it because that's what the consumers wanted. And their stocks failed. Listen, you know, they chucked it out and they hiked the salt back up. And I'm like, wow, you got to be kidding me. It was one of those things where I wonder, no, I know that when you have something as important as food, what you consume, and I understand companies need to make a profit and companies need to be around, but when you attach that and you also require them to be healthy, they're not concerned about healthy. They're concerned about what do consumers like and what makes things go off the shelf, because I want to ask you this too. I've realized, and because I'm more aware and more alert, things that are sugary, things that are sweet, and things that are the worst for you are at eye level in the grocery stores. Things that are healthy are normally at the very, very, very top. You literally have to look up to see it or look down to see it. And I'm like, they go through this much trouble, so I'm like, it must be too, they would lose too much money. I'm under the assumption they would if they just really got healthy. The population will be healthier, but it's and it just kind of is sad when you see that they go through this much trouble.
Yeah, well, it's true though. Like the thing is, in grocery stores, you pay the grocery store like every which way for stuff. One of the things is called shelving cost.
Okay,
you actually have to pay to put it on the right place on the shelf. And the thing is, the companies that do the industrial processing and all that, they have more money to pay for their stuff to be at eye level.
True.
And so they get first pick because they have the most buying power at the grocery store. So their stuff is always going to be eye level. That's why you always see, the chip aisle is all Frito-Lay products anyway.
Yeah.
But even the stuff that you don't know is Frito-Lay is all Frito-Lay products. But like even like the soup aisle and stuff, all the ones that are, you know, full of salt and all that stuff, those are all eye level because they pay for that spot on the shelf. And the products that are healthier for you usually, those companies just don't have as much money to pay for the prime shelf space. So they'll either be at the top or at the bottom, and all the stuff along the middle is what gets bought.
Wow. And I've realized that too. So I'm actually making a conscious effort to look up and look down. Yeah. I know that might sound ridiculous, but I purposely make a conscious effort when I go in and I look at the cereal aisle. I go, okay, look up. I was like, oh, there goes the stuff that's good for this fiber. Okay, I need that. Uh-huh. You know, there's the stuff that's sugar-free, salt-free, mm-hmm. this free, that free. And the thing about it is that I've realized that something as simple as getting something reduced salt is something gluten-free. Even though you're not cutting out everything, because that's very unrealistic to ask people to just go all natural and live by the land.
That is true.
But I think that doing those simple things actually lowers like your cholesterol. Like it makes these numbers go down. And in the long run, I just want to be around as long as I can and not be popping pills forever because I just refuse to turn down fat and salt.
Yeah, absolutely. There are things we can all do to help our health. And like you said, it's just as simple in the grocery store, looking up and looking down, looking at the products that aren't right at eye level, and you'll find much healthier options in some cases than you would if you just kept with where your eyes go naturally, which is the middle of the shelf. So,
who is the, I guess, most famous person that you've kind of interviewed and pulled information about them, about the food industry?
You know what? That I know, I think is, my father working in the food industry has a lot of contacts. So I've talked to a lot of people that are like, I talked to the president of Midas Corporation, who actually used to be the head of finance at Pizza Hut.
Wow.
So I've talked to a lot of people like that. And my father, of course, in human resources at a food company. That is a good question. Who is the,
Because I'm pretty sure you talk to people of all walks of life.
I do. I talk to a lot of different kinds of people about all sorts of different products. Some people have been working in the whole processed food industry, and people that have worked in natural foods. I actually went to a trade show in California last year that's called the Natural Products Expo.
Mm.
And it's all natural products and alternative foods and things that people can – and, you know anyway, so that was really interesting. I talked to a guy, actually, that we work with now at my salsa company. His name is Muhammad Hussein.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. I always feel bad for him when I hear his name.
Yes.
But, yeah. But apparently it's a fairly popular name in Pakistan. Anyway, but he is an awesome guy. He's been helping us with our sales in California. But he's also he worked at PepsiCo for a while. Worked at Quaker Oats, and he also does consulting on the side, and worked at a Mexican food manufacturer, makes a lot of foods for people that you wouldn't expect to have stuff made for them by a different company. So that would probably be the most impressive food person I've talked to so far, Muhammad Hussein.
That name is very unique. When you were talking about at the natural place that you were at, when it comes to natural stuff, I know they were just mostly food, but a lot of people are getting into hair products that are natural that they can actually consume. Have you ever talked to anybody about anything like that? Things that you put on your hair that you can consume in your body?
Yeah. At this show, it was natural products, so it wasn't just food. So there was a whole pavilion that was food, but there were so many hair products there, and I like to go around and just kind of chat with people while they're, you know, handing out samples to everyone, which is my favorite part of trade shows is samples. But yeah, so that it's a whole new industry. Well, not new, but it's fairly new and developing all the time. Just products made out of all sorts of things that you wouldn't think, like a lot of soy-based products for hair.
Wow, for hair.
Yeah, all sorts of different products. And soy seems to be the big thing everyone's pushing right now because it grows fairly easily in a lot of
different kinds. And it's like a blank slate almost. It's like it just soaks up whatever you add to it.
It's true. I love soy for that reason. You can put in all sorts of stuff. And if you're cooking it right, it just soaks up whatever the flavor is and just adds to whatever you're eating. It's an amazing product.
What's the weirdest sample that you ever seen?
Okay, I used to live in Korea. I worked there for a couple of years, and I enjoyed eating street food in Korea because there are all sorts of vendors selling street food there.
Okay.
And one time I ate, I got this thing in a cup. You just buy a cup of it, and it looked like popcorn. And I put it in my mouth. It tasted like popcorn, but if you look really closely, it was actually boiled silkworm larvae.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
What, did it taste like popcorn? You said it tastes like popcorn?
Tastes like popcorn.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes, but that was, yeah, uh-huh.
That's a sample for you, isn't it?
Yeah, it was definitely an interesting sample. I was like, I ate that cup full. I was like, wow, I'm probably never going to try this again, but it's good that I have, because now I know this boiled silkworm tastes like popcorn.
did they give you a side of butter, too?
No, not with butter. No, don't use butter much in Korea, actually.
Oh, what do they use? They use like different types of oils?
Yeah, they use sesame seed oil a lot. That's probably the most popular one that I've seen over there. A lot of oils.
Stir-fry oil. I know I'm probably saying that out of my American ignorance, but I'm assuming stir-fry oil.
Yeah. A lot of times the stir-fry oil is either soy-based oil or it's a soybean or usually soybean oil.
What is the most shocking thing that you have learned doing this job as far as, like, all the people you interviewed? They told you this, and you just looked at them like, you've got to be kidding me.
Yeah. let's see. you know, again, I'm going to go back to soy and just like, I've tried all sorts of, foods over the years, but then especially at that trade show, the past couple of times I've gone, and I'd try things like, this is great, and didn't even realize that it was made of soy until after the fact. It's like, that is just,
wow.
How, it's like, it, you can make it in to taste like beef, it can taste like chicken.
Soy?
Yeah, uh-huh.
Oh. Wow. And when you were saying soy products for hair, when you went, what was it, different types of hair, different textures of hair, or like, you know, did they have like soy? I know this might sound like a silly question, but soy that you can use on your weave, if you have weave, like.
Yeah, they had all sorts of different products for, they had different configurations of them for, different ethnic groups that have different types of hair. So they had all sorts of different products based on, you know, the type of hair that you have. And I'm not sure how different they were from each other. Cause that's another funny thing is like, the products will be made and they'll be like, this one's gluten free and this one's the fat free kind and this is whatever. If you actually look at them, they're the exact same product. They just packaged them like three or four different ways.
Wow.
With different labeling to sell to different groups of people.
Are you for real?
I'm serious.
Wow. And you know what? And I realized that they do that with medication because years ago I worked at this place called Lionel Healthcare here, and they're known around this area for like doing generic medication. Mm-hmm. And I would like work on the packing. I worked on the packing line. It's been years ago, and we would do like generics for Walmart.
Oh,
and what they would do was that somebody would come down, change the taping label from Walmart to Kroger. The pills didn't change.
Yeah.
And we were still packing. And then they would take it and change it to Harris Teeter. And I was like, at that period of time, I was like, you know what? I think that the medication don't change. And I told people this and they thought I was lying. I said, no, y'all, I'm telling the truth. I seen it with my own eyes, y'all. All they do is change the stickers. The bottle is the same. The pills is the same. They might change the boxes. Sometimes they don't even change the boxes. And everybody just thought I was lying. And so I tell people, if you take, Advil, and turn around and take generic ibuprofen and turn them on the sides, the active ingredients, the listing of ingredients are identical. One charges you $9 and one charges you $1.50 for 800 pills. Which would you rather have?
It's true. And like you said, they'll pack them in the exact same plant.
Yes. Yes. Yep. And it was one of them things. My mind said, psh. My mind was blown. I was like, I felt like I got this, the insider scoop when, you know, most of these people just know that this is how it goes. But when you just are a consumer and you go, oh, Advil, oh, Tylenol, you just kind of and that's what the marketing side wants you to do, and just associate the names where you're willing to pay the extra cost.
It's true.
For the same thing.
It is true. Yes. That it's all about packaging and how you market it. Like, when you buy Tylenol as opposed to a generic brand version of the same thing, you're just paying for the Tylenol name. That's it.
That's it. So for those you people out there, that was my PSA for today. Flip your medication over. Any type of medication is over the counter. Get the good kind, get the generic, and flip them over. Because in our country, they cannot change the ingredients to a generic. The generic, actually, by law, has got to be identical. A lot of people don't know this either. Because if you change it, it's not the generic no more.
That's true. That's true. Yeah.
And it's for your protection that they do this, but they know most consumers just buy attached to, like you said, a name brand that they don't really consider that they do this for our safety, because like in other countries, you might have an issue, you know, their package is the same, but they tinkle with it and all of a sudden you ain't getting the same thing anymore.
That's true. Yeah. So that's definitely a reason to buy in America.
Yes. And we have laws. We actually have laws, even though a lot of marketing companies don't like our laws that we have, but we have laws to protect the consumer. Do you know how many people would be sick? How many people would die? You know, and years ago, people used to die from the most simplest things, from employees not washing their hands, cooks not washing their hands. And people go, well, why do we have these laws? Because we had mass death. You know, that's good enough for me. To require you to wash your hands.
Oh, it's true and sad.
At the same time, yes, it's one of those things where you're like, come on, you know, use common sense. Why do we need the FDA? It's like, okay, we didn't have the FDA. I will really consider digging a hole in the backyard and raising my own stuff because y'all are not killing me.
Yeah. It's like, I'd like to think that people would be smart enough to take care of these things on their own. But they're not. That's why there's the FDA.
Apparently they're not. That's why your father did his job and floated around and asked people, because if you don't, who knows what people would get away with.
It's true. It's true. They, even with the laws, people try and get away with all sorts of stuff.
Yes, that's why I'm like, if they break the law, shut them down, because
it's true.
I don't need to get sick. Do you cook?
I do. My wife says poorly. She's the real cook in the family because when I lived in Korea, I was 19 to 21 years old. That's why I lived there for 2 years. And I would cook, but it was like, you know, I lived in a house with, you know, a couple other guys, and it's like, okay, let's just, cook whatever and get out of the house. So it was very poorly cooked food. And so I never really learned to cook very well, except for a couple of Korean dishes, which my wife does not like. So she's the cook in the family. What?
No, I'm just laughing. You was like, not very well. I was like, oh boy.
Yeah, so I would not do well raising all my own food because my wife would have to cook it all, and she'd be like, can we just go out to eat sometime, because this is a lot of work.
Yeah, and give her a break. Now I have to say, I'm proud of my husband. He's actually stepped his cooking game up. I'm proud of him.
Very nice. He
actually goes online and find recipes and cooks from there. But the funniest thing is, like, sometimes his mind is his worst enemy when it comes to things. And I guess because I prepared food and I know. And I remember the first time he cooked with the crock pot.
Yeah.
He didn't really understand that you don't need a lot of water, because it's not like you're cooking on the stove. It's slow and low.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And so he, like, added extra water. And I was like, no. I was like, no, you're just going to be floating in juices. It's going to take forever to get done.
It's just gonna taste like water, man.
Yes.
I get that. Crock pot's one thing I enjoy cooking in because I don't have to do much. It's just kind of a dump everything in and let it sit.
Dump everything in, a little bit of water, and you can let it go. Yeah, crock pot is the best thing. Crock pot is, you can set it in the morning, and when everybody comes home, you have dinner. Or
exactly.
you can set it before you go to sleep, let it cook all night long, and by the time you wake up or by the time you come home for lunch, if you can, it's done.
Yeah, and even if you don't get home right in time, it'll just sit there and simmer until you get home.
Yes. So. And if you got the good kind, it will automatically go to warm.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, that's why I like the crock pot. It's a nice automatic thing. But the problem with me is that my wife says, my problem is that I'll take a recipe and then I'll start thinking about it and be like, maybe I'll just add a little more of that. Maybe a little more of that. She's like, it doesn't do well when you add a little more of this or that. It tastes gross.
You know what? A lot of it is when you add a little bit of this, add a little bit of that, a lot of it is just depending on the spice. I know that might sound like certain spices don't work where, or certain spices have stronger taste than other things.
Yep.
And mm-hmm. So it's one of those things where you kind of have to test and see. And yeah, I love my husband, and I've been with him forever, and he dealt with my bad fried chicken experience. He dealt with, you know, he would come home one day when we first got married, and I would look at him and I would shake my head. He was like, oh, it smelled good. My facial expression, like, go ahead and call the Papa John's, the pizza, because I don't think you want that. If I'm not eating it, I know you don't want it, sir. I tell everybody, be encouraged to all those people that says, I can't cook, be encouraged. If it's something simple as just flipping over a box or something, chicken, boneless, skinless chicken, everybody has recipes for it. I don't care if you flip over your chicken broth, you flip over your spice to the chicken broth, you flip over your bouillon cubes, everything has a simple recipe for it. And so, it's one of those things where I encourage everybody to continue to cook, because, like, we're sharing all these things with you guys. It's a lot of stuff out there that's not good for you, and I'm guilty, and I continue to eat it, but I've gotten to the point where I've learned to eat in moderation.
Yes. That is a key, I think. I got a little story for you. So, about 2001, I was going to college and doing all that, and I started having a lot of headaches, and they kept getting, like, more intense. I was like, man, I'm getting bad migraines.
Uh-oh.
So after, it got to the point where, like, they were so bad I just had to, like, sleep all day to avoid the pain.
Wow.
Which didn't help because then I'd wake up and I'd have the headaches all night and when I was, because I wasn't tired anymore. But, so eventually I went to the hospital so I could get medication, so I get a prescription for migraines or whatever. And the doctor said, well, I have good news and I have bad news. He said, the good news is you don't have migraines. He said, bad news is you have brain cancer.
Oh.
And I laughed because I've been having a horrible semester in college, probably partially because of all the time I've been sleeping instead of studying. But
yes.
So I went through all that, went through surgery, and then I got done, and I was just so happy to be alive. And after the fact, the doctor's like, really? We were pretty sure you died during surgery. It's like, well, okay. So after that, I was like, you know what? I am going to live my life, and I am going to love every minute of it.
I know it's so. I don't blame you. Did you have to go through chemo or anything?
You know what? I didn't go through chemo. Like, they were only able to get a small part of the tumor out, so I still have a 5-pound tumor in my head.
Wow.
But, yeah, apparently the brain is very squishy, and it can make room for a lot of stuff.
Okay.
But anyway, I actually did they were at the university near where I had my surgery, at the University of Utah. They were doing treating cancer with Chinese herbs, actually. It was a test they were doing.
Hmm.
And so I got in on that test. And so I was taking 9 herbal pills 3 times a day. So I was taking 9 times 3, whatever that is, that 27-ish
yep.
something? Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I was taking 27 of those pills a day.
Wow.
And then I eventually went back to the doctor, and he said, you know what? The tumor's still there, but it's growing so slow you'll probably die of old age first. I was like, okay, wow, that was awesome. It slowed down stage 4 cancer to nothing.
Wow!
I know, Chinese herbs.
And the thing is that a lot of people might think that I might be weird for saying this, but I've gotten to the point where medication is good and medication has its purpose. Please don't get me wrong.
Yes.
But I'm to the point where if there's an alternative, all natural method, I'm mm-hmm. more apt to do, especially getting older, I'm more apt to do that. Like, I got in a car wreck at the beginning of the year and I started going to the chiropractor. Oh, sweet. That's okay. I started going to the chiropractor and I realized that going to the chiropractor is natural.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those things where once your spine is aligned, it relieves headaches, it relieves heartburns, it relieves pains up and down to your feet, to your hips and all that stuff, because all that stuff is connected. And a lot That's of true. Times I realize a lot of people go, well, I'm hurting and I'm in pain. They'll run to the doctor. They'll smack some medicine across it, but they're really not fixing the problem. So because they're not fixing and resolving the root of the issue, it eventually comes back.
They're just treating the symptoms is all they're doing.
Yes. And especially here in America, we are not about natural, things, like as far as naturally doing things. And it's amazing, like insurances just recently started adding like chiropractors and massage therapists and stuff mm-hmm. to being covered. But my thing is like chiropractor and massage therapists kind of work hand in hand because that's how I recovered the best. I would go to the chiropractor and he had like a massage therapist in there and I had never been before. So I started going side by side and I realized that while the chiropractor was causing things to move, when I went to the massage therapist, she was actually helping in conjunction of relieving the muscles, relieving the pain, cutting down on swelling. Sometimes things that medication just don't do. And it's one of those things where I realized that the older you get, the more you're more apt to look at natural. I don't know if it's because you're going, well, I know I'm gonna die one day. I'm not trying to speed the process up, or you just get to the point where you're like, you know what? I would prefer natural. So I try my best to do as natural as I can. I know I can't go all natural.
Yeah.
But I try to get as close as I can.
And that's really the safest way to go, I think, because there are some things about modern medicine that are amazing. If we didn't have it. It's like we were saying before, a lot of people would be dying from, you know, not washing hands and things like that.
That's
so,
right.
Yeah, so there's something to be said for modern medicine, but if there's a chance to try an alternative or a natural version, it's not a bad thing to try, I will tell you that.
That's true. And with all the things that you are doing with food, what is the food festival that you're looking for? Because this is the time of the year for food festivals. What food festival are you looking forward to? Or have you already been to it?
I have not been to it yet, but there is a they have like a Taste of Salt Lake City festival where they have a bunch of different vendors and things.
And good.
There's actually a surprising amount of international cuisine in the Salt Lake area. So I like to go to that and just try all sorts of different foods. They have some good Greek restaurants. I, of course, enjoy a lot of Asian food, having lived there for a couple of years. So, so that's a food festival I always look forward to going to because, especially the part where they serve Korean food, because any chance I can get to eat a lot of Korean food, I'll take it.
Especially, I sound like you really like authentic Korean food. Like.
Absolutely. Yeah. I lived for 5 months in Busan, which is the second largest city. But other than that, I was out in the sticks.
Wow.
Like little tiny towns. That,
and villages, like real villages?
Yeah. Okay. Some villages like, okay, so you have a nice house because you have curtains hanging over the different rooms in your house.
Wow.
Yeah, as opposed to walls. Yeah. So, yeah, I was out in the sticks. So I enjoy authentic Korean food.
What is your favorite thing to eat? I know you've been saying you like Korean food, but there's a particular dish that you love.
You know what? I love kimchi bulgogi, which is
You're definitely gonna have to explain that one.
Yeah, I will. Yeah, it's rice and vegetables and kimchi all mixed together and kind of fried up in a pan all together.
Ooh.
It's really good. I guess it's sort of like stir fry rice that you get at Panda Express or something, except better, of course.
Oh,
with,
yes.
With kimchi.
And what is kimchi?
Kimchi is, it's pickled cabbage, but in addition to pickling it, they also put in a lot of, like red pepper paste and things, so it's really spicy as well. So it's pickled cabbage, but it's spicy. It's very tasty.
Sounds
Some people say
good.
It's rotten cabbage, but that's just because in the olden days, they'd actually, in the winter, they'd make it all, then they'd bury it in a pot in the ground until the spring when they'd pull it out.
Oh.
So, yes, that's how they'd ferment it. Because pickled anything is really just fermented in a way that's, you know, that makes it taste a little more sour.
Wow. What is your favorite food that you like to stash? That thing that you like and you're like, honey, you're not getting this. Nobody's getting this. This is just my one thing and I cherish it.
Again, I'm going to have to go back to Korean food because, I actually like seaweed a lot.
Mm.
And I go to Costco and they have these giant boxes of individually wrapped packages of seaweed. They look like little sheets of paper, like about 2 inches by 3 inches long. And they have them in a little stack and you pull out the stack and you eat that with some rice. So good. I'm like, kids, you're not really going to like it anyway, although they might. But I don't ever let them really try it because I try and scare them off it because I love to eat it so much.
And how does seaweed taste?
Seaweed actually is kind of like tofu in the fact that it doesn't have much of a taste at all. It tastes a lot like what you're eating it with.
Okay.
So it's kind of a blank slate. Like for breakfast, a traditional Korean breakfast will be rice, seaweed and kimchi. They use the seaweed actually as kind of like a way to scoop the rice and kimchi up together into like a little tiny taco, I guess, and they'll eat it like that. And they'll just take scoop after scoop with the different pieces of seaweed paper and pick it up and eat it like that. So
wow. What is your favorite thing to eat? Not to eat. What's your favorite thing to drink? Alcoholic or non-alcoholic? Or both. It don't matter.
That's okay. I'm gonna have to say non-alcoholic. Like I said, my father worked for PepsiCo and Pepsi Cola for a long time. I'm quite a fan of Diet Pepsi.
Ah.
Specifically the cherry Diet Pepsi.
Interesting.
I think it's mostly from my childhood because I remember when I was a kid, my grandfather really, really liked it, and we'd visit him in the summer, and he'd keep all of his Diet Wild Cherry Pepsi out in his garage in a cool place, to keep it cool. And I'd always be like, Grandpa, can I go get a cherry Pepsi? And he'd say, sure, sure. So I remember like digging through his garage trying to find the cherry Diet Pepsi. And so happy memories and associated with it, in addition to the fact that it's just good.
I don't blame you. I completely understand. What is the worst thing that you've ever eaten?
Well, I told you about a silkworm larvae,
mm-hmm.
Which is pretty good. You know what? The thing that I think people would think is what might be the grossest, dog soup.
What is dog soup?
Well, it's dog meat in a soup. It's very good. Well, okay, it's not the best. I'll admit that. It doesn't taste great, but maybe the place I had it just wasn't great. But, it's dog meat and sometimes with, other vegetables and stuff in it. But apparently it's very good for male virility. That's what the guy that took me to eat it said. He said, "It's very good. Make you a man." I was like, okay, that's,
oh.
There you go. That's what I'm going for, I guess.
I guess he might say, grow some hair on your chest, I'm assuming.
I already had hair, but I don't know. I don't know, but yeah, so it's good for male virility, and it wasn't, like I said, the worst thing, but I actually ate it on was it September something, 1999? I don't know. Whatever the day Nostradamus had predicted the world was going to end, that was the day I had it. And the guy that I was working with at the time were like, "We should do something crazy today because the world's supposed to end." You know, just kind of a joke. And we were like, "What can we do?" And we were like, "I don't know." Then we met this guy on the street. He was actually, I will admit, he was a little bit tipsy. He'd been drinking most of the day. And he's like, "Hey, you two that I don't know, let's go get some food." We're like, "You're going to buy lunch for us?" "Okay." And he took us to eat boshintang, which is a dog soup.
And question, I know this might sound silly. A, where do these dogs come from?
First of all, they come, well, they're...
Are they farm-raised?
Sort of, I guess. I don't, like, you'd go into Korean markets, especially in small towns, and you'd walk by people, like, selling stuff out in the open market thing, and they'll just have buckets or whatever of all their stuff. Walk by one lady, just had a giant bucket of roasted dogs. like all the hair was burned off of them, but other than that, they just looked like dogs in a bucket.
Oh, like roasted pig?
Yeah, roasted pig or chickens, or, you know, but it was just, they were just dogs.
Wow.
Dead roasted dogs.
Wow, that right there is, I don't think I could top that at all. Wow.
I took a picture of it, but I can't seem to find the picture anywhere, otherwise I'd send it to you.
Yeah, I'm about to say that. Yeah, wow, that would be really, really interesting.
Yes, maybe a little gross, but interesting.
Yes, do you know any Chinese or Korean or any of the language? Do you speak it?
Yeah, I actually do speak Korean. Before I went to Korea, I spent 2 months in an intensive language training program where I was at this place for 8 hours a day learning Korean for 2 months, and then I moved to Korea, and then I'd live with Koreans, and most of my interactions, other than the guy I was usually working with, we usually work in pairs, and so I lived with another person. They weren't usually Korean, but we'd talk to Koreans all day, so I learned Korean fairly well, and I've tried to keep it up since then, talking to people that I know that are Korean, so I've tried to keep it up, so 아직 조금 하지만 그 잘 하는지 정말 잘 모릅니다. And I just said there, I speak Korean okay, but I'm still not great. Because, you know, being a foreigner, 2 years is not enough to learn a language really well. But I learned it a little bit.
Oh, cool. I thank you very much for taking the time out to do this. I want all our fans to go out and hit them up on Twitter. Let him know and show him the black guy who tipped love. Could you tell the fans all your contact information so they can contact you, sir?
Sure. Yeah, you bet. You can email me if you want to email me about being on the show or just general questions at Mark, that's M-A-R-C, at foodmarketingpodcast.com. Just all one word spelled out there. That's probably the best way to get a hold of me. The website is foodmarketingpodcast.com. So you can go there for the latest episodes. Occasionally I'll post a picture if I see something crazy. Yeah, those are probably the two best ways to keep in contact or to contact me. My Twitter handle is a food marketing podcast. It's a little long, so it's actually FOOD, then marketing with none of the vowels, and then pod, food marketing pod, but none of the vowels in marketing. FOOD, MRKTNG. POD. So And I've got a Facebook page as well. If you want to go to Food Marketing Podcast on Facebook, you'd like me there if you'd like for the latest updates and things.
Thank you very much. And for those out there in the premium land is checking out this podcast, show him love and let him know that we do actually listen to, like I said, I'm a podcast lover. So like I said, Stitcher is your best friend. You start listening to stuff and it starts suggestion. I'm one of them people that will stop plucking and listening. And so that's how I found you. And y'all, his podcast is really good quality. And I promise you, before you leave, you'll be educated. Educated and, ooh, I didn't know that. Or educated like, ew, I didn't know that. But either way, you will learn from this guy, y'all. You will learn.
Well, I appreciate that. You know, I have to say, you are awesome. You have your questions prepared and everything. And I've talked to people that don't really interview well, but you did a great job, and I've had a great time talking to you. I appreciate it.
Thank you, sweetie. And I will get my husband to actually send you stuff on our show. So I don't know. You might want to be a guest on our show one day. We would love to have you on if you would want to one day. So I thank you. And yeah, I actually do my research. Like, that's one thing. That's why I said I found out it was 14 different versions of you. Cause I was like, okay, I don't want to be talking about the architect. And he's like, I've never been to architect school. So I was like, I don't want to look stupid. So I'll just let him know that it's 25 versions of him. So I thank you for your time. I thank you for making time out of your busy schedule. And, Roger will, get this information to you. And sir, I thank you. I can't thank you enough. I'm so excited that you even accepted the invitation, and look forward to doing and working with you again, sweetie. So you have a good one.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you, sweetie.